percolate on a particular mix of odd and inspiring news headlines in Wendy's Coffee House. Newsmakers with a penchant for the unknown, unexplained, and unusual share their experiences with UFOs, ghost encounters, near-death experiences, and more for your own unique blend of Wendy's Coffee House Curious. And now, here's Wendy.
You know, it's an active week when April starts out with snow. April 1st and Easter combined, that's interesting. And then the deep freeze that is called spring that we're now in. Hello, reality. So I like it just because it's unpredictable. And sometimes we get a little complacent when things just go rolling right along with no change. And there's just, that's the theme. Wanted to delve into that for just a minute in my little opening segment here. First, a reminder, guest, that's always the focus, and my guest is Stephen Schwartz. He's a scientist, futurist, remote viewer of like 40 years experience. You may have heard of him before, but we're going to get into the new novel that he's written and more of the stuff that he does for fun. But the big change locally, it's a lot of changes at the Plaza, Country Club Plaza stores, just completely revamping that area down there. One of the changes happened to be for a place I worked at part-time for about, maybe 9 years now. And the fun thing behind the scenes, if the store is closing, it was in there just recently, and we're moving things around. It's still, at this time that I'm talking, it's still open. But I heard somebody following me, coming up behind me real fast, kind of like a clip, guy's shoes, you know, making that little clip sound on the cement. And so I move over because I'm thinking, well, I'm in this guy's way. And so I move over and there's nobody there. I'm looking all around going, okay, so was that an echo? And I know better. The front doors are closed. It's like, oh, okay, you got me again. And the fun thing about that is my husband's in at the same time. He's there. And I said, Andy, I heard this guy walking behind me and there's nobody here. He says, you too. So we were comparing notes and I was going toward the front of the store and it was beside me on my right shoulder when I heard it. And we're up by this register, and then he was going toward the back of the store. The same thing was on his right shoulder. We're crossing at about the same place, but the interesting thing that was, we both had that same, it was on the right shoulder, and the sound of the man walking by fast. In the store, I have seen somebody walking across, like horizontal, from one wall to the next, and just like they walked through the wall and the wall wasn't there. I've seen a shadow. And when we first got there, the ghost played by undoing people's zippers, okay? Just... Not that everybody shared that little detail, but that was one of the things that was a signature. The old location was at a different spot on the plaza, and it also was known for having a ghost who liked to play around. And one of the things when I first got there that the ghost let me see was that it liked to throw things. And I was in the department where they had purses and bags and stuff like that. They were on a lower level, almost equal, you know, about 3 inches or so off the floor. And I just straightened everything up, walked by, everything's all nice and neat and tidy, and I heard this little sound. I turned around, behind me was a purse out on the floor about 5 feet from the shelf that would have been, you know, just jettisoned, and it was like, uh-huh, okay, fine. Welcome to retail. Anyway, so things like that happening, and this morning when I'm getting up and getting ready, I'm in between that wake-sleep state, and I hear the dog, little dog, barking at the back door, and I think, well, Jack's at the door barking at something. And he's right beside me. So these things are not, to me, unfamiliar. It's just interesting. Right now, there seems to be a little bit more chaos energy and more things upheaved sometimes brings around that extracurricular activity. The other new thing that just came out, they've got this, if you are a UFO collector, and I mean like the little, the gadgets and the, you know, all the fun stuff, collectability stuff, the Royal Canadian Mint has a new flashy egg-shaped glow-in-the-dark, that's my favorite, coin, and it's commemorating one of Canada's most famous sightings, the UFO sighting. And this is one that was in May 19th, 1967. A guy who was just, you know, having his normal day like everybody else, he saw two flying saucers land near the lake, and this is Falcon Lake in Manitoba. He decided he would go approach one about 150 feet away from him, he said. He reported it. That it, he went there, got close to it, touched it, it lifted off, knocked him on the ground. In that instant, you know, life changed for him. His son, who was 9 years old at the time, said he remembered his dad coming home stinking and sick. He said he, when he walked in the bedroom, he could smell the whole place just really stunk sulfur and burnt motor. Anyway, he said he would be really amazed if he'd be floored by the coin, which is an interesting term because he was flattened when the thing took off. So I also like the fact that it's becoming a little less of a stigma to talk about these kinds of experiences, too. So that's another excuse to talk about it, just the things that are happening, you know, around us all the time. Now, the last guest I talked with, Terry Albright, we're going to have him back again. But he also sent me some fun and really nice orb photos. So I did go ahead and update that on the Wendy's Coffeehouse blog so you can see his orb photos. I just put one. I'll put some more. When we talk again, I'll add some more. I've got my own. This is, you know, this isn't that, I guess, for me, this is part of what I experience. So it's not that unusual. But I think that people, the more they start comparing stories and comparing notes, because when I posted this on Facebook and said, hey, the ghost did this, then I got at least one other person who said, oh, yeah, the old place was haunted, too. And we didn't always talk about this because, it, you know, you're doing your work and not everybody had the encounter. And sometimes don't even know that they have the encounter. Like that little zipper thing was a quirk. That was, you know, that was okay, and you're not going to tell everybody that this is a signature. But it used to be a man's, that the place has turned over several times, and at one point it was a men's clothing store. And then it was, I think, Saks was in there, Mark Shale. So it has a history of being retail, and so it's just the retail ghost or someone like that who's continuing to entertain people with his antics, her antics. It did sound like, with the clip, a male. My guest is no stranger to remote viewing and parapsychology and psychic material. His name, Stephen Schwartz, and I've got the book, one of the newest books that he has out called Awakening, and I like it. It's a novel, all right? His other stuff is a little bit more, should I say, official. This is a novel, and it's Awakening, and the cool thing about it, it does include that UFO element because the full title, Awakening, A Novel of Aliens and Consciousness. Stephen, welcome.
Morning. How are you?
I'm great. I'm great. I'm glad to talk with you again.
Yes, absolutely.
I wanted to just kind of give you a quick intro here before we get into more of your book. And I also saw that something that I hadn't seen recently was you had done a remote viewing. And this is something you're familiar with. You've been doing this for 40-some years. You did a remote viewing for, was it 2050?
Yes.
Okay. Can we talk about that, too?
Sure.
Okay. All right. So, 'cause I think that also is fascinating, for one thing, how it works and the fact that it's been going on. You guys, you've been studying it for at least 40 years. And you were studying it with people like Ingo Swann. And there's another project that you were part of, the Alexandria Project. And that involved...
Yes, I put that project together.
Yes. Yes. So that's... I wanted to also talk about that, too, to give people an idea of the kind of stuff that you have studied. And when you talk about this, you also talk about the corroborative evidence and the research that says this stuff is legit. The telepathy, the remote viewing, all of these things aren't novelty, and they didn't just all of a sudden pop out of the ether yesterday. And I'd like to get beyond that novelty thing of everybody kind of saying, well, okay, introducing it for the very first time. I think you'd be fine with that, right?
Absolutely.
Okay. Before the book is available now, and I think it came out in the fall, Awakening, and
yes,
we'll do that one first, just to give people an idea.
Okay.
Okay. Since I would like to at least steer people in a way that they can get up to speed with some of the information that is in your novel that might also apply to somebody's real world, like the guy who had the experience in Canada. All right.
Mm-hmm.
So we're going to take a quick break, do some commercials, and come back with my guest, Stephen Schwartz. And I think you're going to be extremely interested in what he has to say. It covers a whole lot of info of here, now, and in the future. Coming up, again, more information about what's happening now and all the change that we're undergoing and why it might be a little less weird when you talk about UFOs and consciousness. Because here's a guy who can give you some details and some background and some legitimacy. Up next on Wendy's Coffee House. Wendy's Coffee House, KCMO Talk Radio. My guest, Stephen Schwartz. The book, that's why I was glad to see this Canadian mint coin, glow in the dark, that's my favorite, talks about this new book, recent book, the novel of Aliens and Consciousness. It's called Awakening. And I read it. It's one of those that you, once you start it, you just can't, or at least I was like, okay, I've got to read this and I have to go to bed, but I'm not going to bed because I still have to read it. And I've got one more chapter if I could just do, yeah. So I was hooked. All right, Stephen. So yay. Thank you. I appreciate it. I love it.
Good.
What was this for this? What was the inspiration?
Well, I wrote a novel because, you know, I've written hundreds of scientific papers and 25 book chapters in textbooks and a whole bunch of nonfiction books. But I realized that millennials, particularly when I saw the research data, they're not reading as many nonfiction books. They read a lot of fiction and they look at television. So I thought, well, if I want to get these ideas out to people, scientifically based ideas, but if I want to get these ideas out, I ought to put them in a novel. So I wrote a novel, and I actually discovered that I really enjoy novels, so I've written another one.
Okay, well, I'm biased. I like this one, too. It's just, there's a lot of stuff in there that kind of deals with the hidden government program and the, you know, the idea that there might be some alien or aliens tucked away somewhere. The clandestine operations that, of course, everybody's believing that, oh, the government knows what they're doing. I kind of doubt that. But at the same time, there is this lovely story. And you throw a few things with the connection there that might be telepathic with the alien. Is that what's happening?
Well, the book is about it. The idea of the alien came because in 1973, a long time ago, the American Anthropological Association asked me and some other people to put together a panel on extraterrestrials from an anthropological point of view.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and the main point was, what did anthropology have anything to say about extraterrestrials? And that was a very interesting experience. I never forgot it. And I had a researcher when I was running the Mobius Laboratory, woman named Ann Druffel, who was one of the founders of MUFON and was really deep into all of this. And I got to know John Mack, who was, of course, the scientist that became so well-known because of the abduction stuff. And so when I was thinking of what novel, how I could put a novel together, all that was sort of stewing around in my head. And I decided to use that use the story as the medium to talk about the nature of consciousness. And that's really the book is really an extension of what science knows about consciousness and also what anthropology suggests about, which is part of science, but I mean, what anthropology particularly suggests about aliens, because I think most of what people talk about is an extension of a kind of anthropomorphization of extraterrestrials and extension of the memes of Star Wars and things like that. And I don't think any of that is right on the basis of the data.
Okay, let's veer off into that. The data suggests what?
Well, if you think about it, all of this stuff, all of the sort of anecdotal information or the field, spontaneous field reports, I guess maybe that'd be the way you'd call it in a research paper, about UFOs all suggest that aliens, A, exist, which I think is, I mean, it's pretty preposterous to believe that there are trillions of planets in the universe and that we're the only life form. So, I mean, just for starters, that always seemed very strange. But in any case, they behave like cultural anthropologists. I mean, if you think about it, what do cultural anthropologists do? Well, they go to study, for instance, a primitive tribe. I want to note, by the way, having spent time with the Kung Bushmen in the Kalahari Desert, that the people we describe as primitive people are not primitive. They're simply sophisticated in a different way than we are in the technological cultures. But in any case, they behave like cultural anthropologists. That is, they cultural anthropologists who want to study, say, a tribe in the Brazilian Amazonian forest or a jungle or the in New Guinea or someplace. Well, you go and you camp out near the village, but not in the village, and you cultivate relationships with informants who try to talk to you about what the village life and what the beliefs and worldview of the village is. And that's exactly what we see extraterrestrials doing.
Yeah.
I mean, if the idea was to, that sort of Star Wars, conquer war, all that sort of stuff, well, they could have done it hundreds of years ago, several thousand years ago. I mean, there are reports about extraterrestrials that go back into the Vedic literature and, you know, go back thousands of years. So if conquest was the point of the game, well, that would have already happened, but it hasn't. That's not what's going on. What's going on, I think, is that they are simply observing us, because any sentient beings who were capable of space intergalactic travel would, by the nature of the ability, want to observe other cultures, other beings, other sentient beings that were on the verge of developing those kinds of abilities. And they would also know that there is a kind of tip point that you get with technology when it's just driven by a materialist worldview, where you can very easily destroy yourself. You have a nuclear war, for instance, or the extraction of substances from the earth creates so much pollution that it breaks down the ecosystem. And we're kind of at that threshold. So Awakening as a novel is a story about this senior analyst who's working for the Congress, for the Senate, and he comes to believe that they are holding a living extraterrestrial at a secret location, and how he responds to that. First he doesn't believe it, and then once he becomes to believe it because of the evidence, he then decides to contact this being, and it's the story of what he does and how everybody responds to what he does. And then once he does make contact, it's a story about the nature of consciousness and how beings that were capable of that kind of interstellar travel would be able, what their worldview would be like. Because it's clearly not conquest and war, although that's the Star Wars meme.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, for one thing, just think about it for a minute. You know, during the American colonial period, the British couldn't control the American colonies, and they were a five-week sailing trip away. So if you were trying to control an empire across hundreds of thousands of light years, I mean, it's preposterous.
Yeah.
Because you just can't maintain the kind of micromanagement that empires require. So that isn't what you would be doing at all. That's one part of it. The other part of it, the reason for Awakening, came out of a dinner that I had with a man named Arthur Koestler, who was an extraordinary guy, a writer, a thinker, now dead. But he wrote, he was in the process of working on a book, and he and I had dinner in London, and he said to me, has it ever occurred to you, Stephen, that about 40,000 years ago, that we were, that some extraterrestrial group came in and manipulated us genetically, just you only need to do a few people to get it started, and that caused a change so that the high brain, the midbrain, and the reptilian brain in high-order primates coordinated in a different way, and that's what really creates Homo sapien. And he wrote it up later on, a few years later, he wrote it up in a book called Janet, and I never forgot that. So
okay.
This is a part of what the Awakening is about.
What the heck? Okay, hang on. We're going to get into the next break and talk about that, the communication there, that well, you don't use your voice, but you do communicate. And
yes.
We'll do that. In the meantime, though, just keeping this remote viewing on the back burner, because we'll get into that, too, and what you might have seen for 2050. Coming up on Wendy's Coffeehouse, KCMO Talk Radio.
What is the explanation? Who knows?
KCMO Talk Radio, Wendy's Coffeehouse. Hi there. Thanks for listening. My guest, now, when he said he'd written a few papers, or several, if we do the number count, more than 130 technical reports and papers, and he was one of the founders of the remote viewing project. So there might be a few things that he's up to speed on that would be really helpful. If you get on YouTube and watch Jeffrey Mishlove's New Thinking Aloud, just, you know, go through those like potato chips, because you'll be up to speed on all sorts of stuff that hasn't yet made it to the mainstream and really should. It's long overdue, because this remote viewing stuff's been going on for 40 years, at least, you know, currently, and with Stephen as part of it. But 130 technical reports and papers. You might have seen some of his articles that he's written in Smithsonian, Omni, the Washington Post, New York Times. The books, if you want to read those, The Secret Vaults of Time, The Alexandria Project, which talks about this fantastic program that they did trying to figure out remote viewing and discovering basically the real, legit archaeological information to see if they could do that better than, you know, the potential scientists out there just doing it with the nuts and bolts, you know, digging up dirt. Anyway, The Opening to the Infinite, he also does a session with that. You can check on the website to find out more information about that. Stephen, okay, it would take me, you know, another 4 hours to tell everybody everything you've done. So let's just get on with this. And back into, all right, with the book Awakening. This is a teaser for people who might want to put two and two together about the fact that aliens are, or extraterrestrials, however we, you know, extra dimensional beings, might be a little more advanced than us and not really interested in conquering the planet.
Yes, okay. The idea, I mean, as I said earlier in the earlier segment, you know, most of what people think about extraterrestrials is based on the memes that come out of Star Wars and Star Trek and things like that, where it's all about war and conquest. And but the fact is that if extraterrestrials wanted to conquer the Earth, I mean, they'd have done it thousands of years ago. So that clearly is not what they're about. They're doing something else, and I suspect that, as I said, they're behaving like cultural anthropologists. They're monitoring us because we have reached a point in technological development where we can either make a breakthrough or we can destroy ourselves. And from the point of view of an observer, that's a very interesting thing to keep track of. And I would suspect that what they're trying to do is to, in a very discreet way, kind of put their thumb on the scale in favor of well-being and survival and a change of consciousness.
I want to get back into the book. This is the next book you're going to, we talked about off air was the one on remote viewing, but I want to get into this, how the setup for that would be, because you did a program that was the Alexandria Project, and this is like an extensive application of non-local consciousness. This is huge. This is a really big deal. And how many years ago was that?
Well, that project went on from 79 to 81, although it continues because I think I know where the bones of Alexander the Great are, and I've been trying to get permission from the people who have them to do the DNA analysis. It's just very difficult because it's a Christian community.
Wow.
And they are very concerned because in Egypt right now, first of all, it's very disordered, and second of all, there is a lot of anti-Christian sentiment, and so they're very concerned that if they were to let me do what I want to do, that it would bring attention to them in a way that would produce sort of negative reaction.
Yeah, okay. Okay, well, that's a good tease. Well, but with that, you were able to legitimize remote viewing and give it, you know, how many psychics, 11 psychics?
Well, that project used 11, yes. I had I use a protocol that involves multiple viewers because I basically have adapted the same techniques that are used in the intelligence world or in law enforcement or in journalism or investigative reporting of getting multiple informants and looking at where they agree. Not everybody gets everything right. Not everybody sees everything. But if you take a number of interviews and you then look at across all of them and you break them down concept by concept, you can get a pretty accurate reconstruction of whatever it is you're trying to do. And in the case of the Alexandria Project, I was approached by two women historians who were interested in Alexandria. Alexandria is the second largest city in Egypt, and it was founded by Alexander the Great and has been one of the world's leading cities for several thousand years. It's where Cleopatra was, where Caesar was, where Mark Antony was. It had the Lighthouse of Pharos, one of the seven wonders of the ancient world. It had the library, the Great Library of Alexandria. So these two women historians approached me and said, could you find Cleopatra's palace and Mark Antony's Timonium, it was his palace, and could you find the Lighthouse of Pharos, and could you find the tomb of Alexander the Great? And I put together a project that took several years, had five universities involved with it, and also I had Harold Edgerton from MIT, who was the inventor of side-scan sonar and then one of the most prestigious scientists in the world, to do the side-scan sonar work to see whether you could find electronically what the remote viewers were finding using non-local consciousness. It turned out you couldn't. That is, you could not do it.
Yeah.
He tried, and it didn't work. But we were able to find everything I just described, and with the help of various universities who worked on the excavations, and we were able to reconstruct the material. We found the palace. It redefined the entire layout of the ancient city, which it turned out was much further much further out to sea. That is, there have been subsidence of the tectonic plate on which Alexandria sits. And a good part of the city had gone underwater, and people didn't really know that. So the palace of Cleopatra, the Lighthouse of Pharos, all that's underwater.
Mm-hmm.
And I asked remote viewers, before I ever went to Egypt, I had a group of remote viewers, 11 in that case. I always use multiple remote viewers.
Yeah.
Anyway, 11 remote viewers who were scattered all over the world. I sent them a British map of Alexandria and the seacoast, and I asked them a series of questions. Please locate these things and then describe for me, not just locate them, but describe for me what I'm going to find when I get there. So this is not a search process. I mean, the finding of Cleopatra's palace took about 5 minutes.
Okay.
So they marked on the map. I took all of the place names off the map. I took all the colors off the map because we know from research that people tend to favor certain colors. So
yeah.
I had the maps all turned into blueprints so that they were that kind of bluish color and the kind of gray background you see on blueprints.
Yeah.
And so there was nothing to cue them. And I gave them the map and I asked them to locate these things and then to describe for me what would be found there. And I would analyze them in concept by concept. So if someone said to me, well, if you go there, you're going to find these statues, and this is what they look like, and they made me a little drawing, and they said, well, you know, the statues have got, like, draped material over their bodies, and, I mean, that's draped and material, that's two concepts. So this is incredibly granular. It's like doing intelligence work, and we had independent scientists who were not involved with getting the data or building the hypotheses that guided the field work to evaluate after the fact, after we'd done the digging or the diving,
yeah,
to give us an analysis of the accuracy, and the accuracy was in the high 80s.
Okay, we're going to have to take a break. But that sets us up. That sets us up for the next, for you, the next novel that is about remote viewing. So I want to promote that since it isn't out yet, and it is coming out, and it's going to be just as, I think, fabulous as the first one. Let's get into that. We're going to take a quick break, come back with my guest, who sees all sorts of extraordinary things with non-ordinary abilities. How's that? Just with extraordinary and, I think, fascinating methods here on Wendy's Coffee House, KCMO Talk Radio. Wendy's Coffee House, KCMO Talk Radio. My guest, Stephen Schwartz, you've got to read the book, Awakening. Okay, first, before we get any further, you've got to read the book because it puts a few things together that, you know, this is current. This is the background that he has with all the experience and the research that he's done over the years in, related to consciousness, including remote viewing and that kind of thing. A novel of aliens and consciousness, and I love it. So do that. And he's also got another book coming up. First, I want to say, in that first book, to me, it seems like you're relating or you're connecting potential conversations through telepathy. Is that what's happening?
Well, the term telepathy was coined in 1887 by a guy named Frederick Myers, who, because at that time, the people that were doing consciousness research were also the same men who were doing the electronics research, telepathy, telephony, television, you know, all of those things were all of those electronic things were developing. And their idea was that people were kind of like walkie-talkies where you sent something to somebody and they postulated that it was some sort of wave and all that sort of thing, right? None of that is correct. What we call telepathy is not mind-to-mind communication. It's much more like an email where you contact the Internet, and the Internet then breaks the information down into little packets and sends it out, and you at the other end, or the person who you're sending it to, then gets a message, and it's as if you were directly talking to them. It's, you know, I'm sending an email to Wendy, and so what you feel is that, well, Stephen sent me an email, and there it is. Whereas, in fact, it's the process of how it got there is quite different. The same thing is true in telepathy. What's really going on is that you open to non-local consciousness, and through your intention, you hold the concept of contacting Wendy, and Wendy opens to non-local consciousness and gets it. But it's much more like the Internet than it is like a walkie-talkie. Now, why do we know that?
Yeah.
Well, one answer is, how in the world would you, with your brain, how would you target, out of 7 billion people, Wendy?
Mm-hmm.
How would you find her? What would be the, you know, does she have an address in the telepathy world? No.
Okay.
What happens is you hold an intention, and that intention is like the search term that you would put in Google. So, Wendy Garrard, okay? And then that would, your website would come up.
Well, yeah.
I hold the intention. I'm trying to get a concept across to Wendy Garrard, and so I, Garrett, actually, excuse me, I apologize.
That's close.
that I'm trying to send a message to, I know a Wendy Garrard, that's the problem.
Uh-huh.
I'm trying to get a concept across to Wendy Garrett, and so I hold this consciousness. And what happens is that you pick up on that. It's like you get a little note in a like a text message.
A ping. Yes.
You get a ping. Yes, that's it. You
mm-hmm.
get a ping, and so that comes through. But it's not person to person, because first of all, how would you target them? And second of all, your brain doesn't have the kind of power that it would take to send a message. There's no sending. There's no signal. There's no sending. There's no receiver. What you've got is that we are all, because consciousness is fundamental, we all are fundamentally consciousness.
Yeah.
The physical part of us is a manifestation of consciousness. And so when you open to non-local consciousness, you can contact anybody, anywhere. Distance and time don't make any difference. And so people have experiences where they will be going along, and then suddenly they'll almost like a voice in their head. In fact, for some people,
yeah.
it is a voice in their head.
Yes, it is. Uh-huh.
It says, you know, do this, or you can find whatever it is you're looking for at this particular place. It's not that I'm sending you a signal like a walkie-talkie. It's that you're holding the intention. And the same thing is true in terms of healing. You don't send healing. What you do is you hold the intention to be of therapeutic intent towards the well-being of another organism,
mm-hmm.
and that they link up. You link in the non-local, and it has an. You can have a measurable, objectively measurable influence. That's why healing works.
Yes.
And remote viewing is just a protocol for utilizing this ability. It's a standard, normal human ability. I mean, it's spread through the population like anything else. Some people are really good at it. Some people can't seem to get it. Most of us fall somewhere in the middle, just like violin playing or skiing or soccer playing. And depending on how we each have sort of innate human ability, and then the question is, do we develop the discipline to attain and sustain intentioned, focused awareness? That's the key to the whole business.
Okay, I've got 3 minutes, and I wanted to talk to you about Opening to the Infinite, but they can find that on the website. What we don't know yet is about the next book on remote viewing. So let's give us a tease.
Well, the new book, which is called The Vision, A Novel of Time and Consciousness, which will be out in about 3 weeks. You get it on Amazon,
mm-hmm.
Or elsewhere, but anyway, Amazon, is a story of a small group of people. What would you ask yourself this question? If you and five of your friends came to believe that a 5-kiloton nuclear bomb was going to go off in your city, what would you do?
After panic.
Panic, okay. Yeah. Would you run away? Would you say, oh, my God, I can't run away because then millions of people would die? Well, you'd probably go to the government and say, well, we think this is going to happen. But if they said to you, how do you know that? And you said, well, we remote viewed it. You know, they'd go, oh, please.
Chuckle, right.
Right. So it's the story about how a group, a scientist who runs a lab and a small group of people who are working with him as remote viewers, they come to believe that a nuclear bomb is going to go off in Washington, D.C. and blow up the Capitol. And it's what they do to try to make that, to stop that.
Basically, it's a recipe.
Yes, well, it's what you would actually do. I mean, I thought through, what would you do?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, if you think about it, it's if you actually knew this and you came to believe that it was true, what would you do? And it's a challenging question.
But with remote viewing, you've got the tools.
Well, they do. They use remote viewing, and that helps them solve the problem. That's all I'm going to say.
I know, because the book is there. We have to read the book.
You have to read the book.
Okay.
It's called The Vision, A Novel of Time and Consciousness. And it is not a continuation of Awakening, a novel of aliens and consciousness,
mm-hmm.
but it is in the same realm.
Okay. All right. And Awakening is a slam dunk, so this one I'm sure will be too. And if you're listening, okay, just put this in your consciousness. And the one thing that Stephen goes back to and all the things that I've seen, consciousness is fundamental from Max Planck. And I think we're where we need to be right now to start practicing what we are gifted at. And some of that is this elevation to the next level of awareness. Being connected consciously. Stephen, thank you. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Wendy. You take care.
I will. And we'll keep reading. We'll keep reading.
Good.
All right. Now, if you're listening, you can check out Greenwood Press if you want to do that. The Schwartz Report, Schwartz.net, is also the website for his information. And just stay focused, stay positive, stay proactive. This stuff is real. It isn't fiction. It's been proven, and a lot of his research is a result of that, okay? So until next time, stay curious. Check out the blog. You can catch up at wendyscoffeehouse.com. See ya!